afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
Hello, Aaron.
You better be nice to me today, Bill, or I'll go out and tell everybody that you clobbered me.
I know, it looks like it, too. Discipline, abuse. Yeah, that's my motto. Hey, my name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery.
Do tell.
Yes, they're our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. If you're looking for a John Deere Rider mower, Z mower, go up and see them. They're getting all kinds of inventory in right now, so should have you covered on that front. They also have Honda generators, steel products, full showroom for you to browse through. Got a lot of John Deere toys up there, too. So if you got little ones and want to buy them a little John Deere tractor, go up and see them. They're at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. Or you can give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da!
Yeah.
So, let's see. I guess our unsolicited advertisement this week, I have two.
Uh-oh. Mm-hmm. Here we go. Free advertising.
Two. Free advertising.
Yeah, give us a call if you want free advertising. Fairly common thing with Aaron.
But you know what? If you don't do a good job, you get that free advertising too.
Yeah, well, okay.
And that's a bad deal. Okay, so I had the old lady eye bags dealt with on the top of my eyelid so I could see again. So Dr. Max Malotki here in Reading, did a great job. Right now, it looks like Bill beat me up, so we're having a little fun with that.
Yeah,
but
stitches. It's not a big deal, you know. When they talk back, you gotta,
gotta solve that problem. At least you were really even about it, and it really looks like, you know, I almost got plastic surgery.
Well,
it's pretty great.
Is that the plan? Yeah, that's the plan. You got to be careful.
And then they tell you you have to be propped up. You have to sleep propped up for a few days, and you go, yes, I have a sleep number bed.
There you go.
Bonus.
Yep.
They show you these pictures of how to put pillows up and all that stuff. Child's play. You hit the button.
Hit the button. Mm-hmm. Up you go.
Hit the button, and your problems are over.
Yeah.
So Sleep Number and Dr. Max Malotki are my picks of the day. Bill, you need to get with it.
This
obsession with Pape Machinery.
I know it. I do.
We're going to put you on meds.
Nice.
Oh, my God. Okay, I'm looking at a blank screen. At least I'm looking at something. That's more than I've been doing the last couple of days. Our guest today, though, we are, of course, talking about something else half the people will really like and the other half the people will not like. So if you're a not like, you know what? This is where you are happy to be living in the United States of America, where you can change the channel. Because we're going to talk about climate change, and we're not going to talk about the kind you like. We're going to talk about the kind that's fake, that is trying to ruin our lives and control us and all the rest of it, all for nothing.
Yeah.
So might as well start with my favorite, CO2. Mm-hmm. I'm going to start there before we interrupt Mr. Friedman. Okay, so a guy named something. It's not Loudon Wainwright, but that was the first name that popped into my head.
That's not it. That's a dead skunk in the middle of the road,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Feed medication doesn't do much for my
no,
my train
it,
of thought.
It doesn't. I'm going to have to step in here in a minute.
Anyway, whatever the heck his name was, he taught us that if CO2 is a pollutant, this is really, it's a lot of fun to do. So if you have somebody who's really, really big on the CO2 thing, you ask them, do you think CO2 is a pollutant? And when they say yes, you say, did you realize that we were living in ambient air of 400 parts per million CO2, and you're thinking, oh God, it's a bunch of numbers. No, these are good numbers, easy numbers you can remember. 400 parts per million.
And that's just everyday air,
yep.
Breathe in, breathe out.
Yep, and they don't dispute that.
Right.
That's not a cooked figure. You don't have to get 97% of the
high,
fake scientists to agree.
High.
None of that.
Yeah.
400 parts per million. But if you breathe into someone like you're doing,
mouth-to-mouth resuscitation,
That's 40,000 parts per million. Well, by my calculations,
that would kill them.
Yeah, if that's toxic, you would think they would all die, and they didn't all die. So, but 100% of the time that I have asked that question to, science people and climate activists and whatnot, they all scratch their heads. They give me that awkward look, and then I say, well, how does that happen? Why doesn't it kill them? 100% of the time they tell me it's different.
It's different CO2. That's so not the same.
Yeah, it's a different periodic table of elements that you use when you're talking about that CO2, and it doesn't make people die. So
there's the end of my lesson.
That's my climate discussion, and after that, they don't want to ask me any more questions. So for those of you who are taking notes about the shortcut, there you go. There's the cliff notes for you.
There you are.
Oh, our guest, Peter Friedman, he puts up with us. God bless him. He comes on for a wide variety of topics, and he is full of information, chock full, I might say. And he has got just tons of background, but he's a really, really good researcher. And at first, all the programs we did with him were on Islam. And if you have not heard those, you really should go back to the archives at wethepeopleradio.us.
The one thing I learned about on those discussions about Islam, read the book. Read the book.
He always says that.
Yes.
He always says, read the book. But you can cheat and listen to the show. Don't tell him, though, even though we have him on. I don't know. He's probably not on hold. He's going to burst in any minute and say, for God's sake, shut up. Okay. Mr. Friedman, take us to climate change.
Yep. Yes, ma'am.
And beyond.
Two CO2 things, okay? If you're giving mouth-to-mouth resuscitation to somebody, it's 40,000 times. Well, how about everybody for a year and a half breathing into a mask?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you're polluting yourself by breathing into a mask, which is completely worthless because of the size of the molecule of the COVID. All of this defies common sense.
Yep. Yeah, if CO2 was actually poisonous, there's no way they could be doing mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, wearing masks, all those things. None of that makes any sense.
Unless you're wearing the masks, the free masks they give you when you walk into the store, the little blue ones. most of the time they say made in China on them, but those work really good for stopping the coronavirus. Is that right?
Really?
I'm gonna give Bill a black eye.
97% of the virus will penetrate that mask.
Yes.
He's kidding.
Yeah, totally worthless. But you see people wearing them.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's fear again. You know, it's now a mark. It's like it's taken the place of the Make America Great Red Hat. So, you know, if you're wearing that mask, it's like wearing a MAGA hat now.
The scary red hat?
That's how people look at it. Let me give you another little CO2 number. Okay. I love the numbers. Of the CO2 in our atmosphere that we breathe, between CO2 and oxygen, CO2 in the atmosphere when we are breathing accounts for 0.04%. You got that?
Mm-hmm.
So CO2 in the atmosphere that we breathe, the air that we breathe, is 0.04% of the O2. Man-made CO2, this is from fossil fuels and cars driving around and airplanes flying around, all of that amounts to 0.03% of the 0.04%.
Okay, so that's really small amount.
That's a really small amount, okay? That's an incredibly small amount. The whole climate change thing, which started out as global warming, and they couldn't sell that. Al Gore had his little nonsense movie that my kids unfortunately had to see in school called An Inconvenient Truth. You know, it was inconvenient BS. On the other hand, let me set a foundation here, okay? I'm not like Dan Brown and the Da Vinci Code. Okay, I love Dan Brown, I love the Da Vinci Code, it's a great novel, but the problem was that Dan Brown took dots that were legitimate, and where he could not bridge those dots, he created a dot in between.
Oh yeah, that's always bad.
So, you know, we could have a whole thing on a Sunday about the Da Vinci Code and the Messianic legacy and all the rest of that stuff. However, let's lay some foundation for the whole climate change thing. Now, is there climate change? Of course, we call it season.
Yeah, we're having one now. It's called summer. It's 8,000 degrees outside.
Yeah, it's called summer, winter, autumn, fall, whatever. Okay. Let's go back about 10,000 years. We have to go back prior to the discovery of fire. The two most historical events in human history is the discovery of fire and the ability to control it and the wheel. Everything else in human history emanates from those two things. So let's go back to just prior to fire. I want to bring up what's called the energy density of fuels. Now, prior to the discovery of fire, man was walking around with one manpower, okay, and his energy density was whatever he could muster in order to do whatever he wanted to do. So if he was a hunter-gatherer, he would go out there and he would hunt an animal and everything. It wasn't a community affair. It was this one guy like Darwin trying to survive. And he was using his own energy to do it. Now we discover fire. Well, fire allowed tremendous economic and human growth. Why? Because now this hunter-gatherer, he could bring it back to the village, and they could skin it, they could now cook it, and they could feed a lot of people. So we had this tremendous advancement in economic and human growth based upon the discovery of fire. From that, we get to chemical fire, which comes from things like wood, coal, natural gas, and petroleum products, which had tremendously increasingly higher energy densities than fire did, and economic growth took off. And it led to the Industrial Revolution, because now people were living better, there was more employment, there was the ability to produce more based upon the energy density of fuel. So in other words, every time the energy density of fuel goes up, it creates more economic and human growth. I mean, one follows the other one, okay? All right, so when we took coal and we started to use coal has a density energy of 50% more than the same amount of wood. So obviously a coal fire produces more energy than a wood fire, all right? If you go out in the backyard and you barbecue on July 4th, you can find that out real easily. Set up two barbecues. Try to barbecue something with wood on one side and try and barbecue with coal, charcoal, briquettes on the other side. Very simple. Very simple. Then we got into petroleum products, we got into diesel fuel, and when diesel fuel was created, it had 70% more energy now than the same amount of coal. All right? Mm-hmm. So that energy was then released. 70%. As we got into diesel, we got into diesel engines, we got into diesel-powered ships, diesel-powered cars, all right? All this kind of stuff. Obviously, more power, we were able to control it, harness it, and the human condition advanced. Then we get into about 1956. Okay? 1956, Admiral Hyman Rickover pioneered the Nautilus submarine project using a nuclear reactor. And we learned about nuclear energy, of course, from the Manhattan Project in 1945. So something good actually came out of the Manhattan Project. The nuclear power energy density is 18,000 times greater than any petroleum product. So nuclear energy is 18,000 times more energy dense, creates more energy per weight than oil or diesel, any petroleum product, okay? And it's much cleaner, right?
And that's the one they hate the most.
Well, of course they do, but I'm going to tell you why. We're going to get to that.
Hold that thought. Got to take a really quick break. I hate to interrupt nuclear.
Well, right at the punchline.
I know. Yeah. But you know what? That'll get us through the really short break. Our guest is Peter Friedman, and you are listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them? When they move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body.
I forgot to tell you, I had a whole stash of global warming songs.
Throw a little kumbaya in there, too. That's great.
I've got some with that. I'm saving it for later. Okay. Back to nuclear power.
Okay. So it has always intrigued me with the homeless. Let's relate this to the homeless problem real quick. So, for example, we have an aircraft carrier that's sitting down there in Coronado. We have an aircraft carrier sitting in Manhattan, the Intrepid. These are nuclear-powered carriers that have been decommissioned. They are nuclear-powered, and they can hold anywhere from 4,500 to 5,000 people. Well, instead of decommissioning a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier, why don't we dock them someplace, all right, like the USS Hornet here in Alameda, and pick up the homeless and put the homeless on board because they're all completely self-contained. Everything is self-contained. And it would take them off the street. And you have sick bays on there. You have cafeterias on there. And I've always wondered, why do we decommission these things, scrap them, and they are the perfect homeless shelter? All right, so moving right along, we have a complete nuclear-powered Navy. We have never, in the history of America, we have never had a nuclear accident on board a naval ship. I think we have it down to a science, okay? Starting in 1956 with the USS Nautilus, who, as you recall, remember, went underneath the North Pole ice pack. That's 1956. So for 75 years, roughly, okay, we have had the ability to have unlimited clean power that is 18,000 times greater than any petroleum product. So imagine all these people on the East Coast who have their homes where you have terrible winters and stuff and they have to have heating oil. We could have a small nuclear cell in every one of these homes and you would have unlimited power for anywhere from 6 months to 2 years without having to renew it. Nuclear energy could sustain population growth indefinitely. That's the problem. That is the problem, because that's not what people want. They want to curb population. So let me talk about biological fuel density. If you take a look at the recommended daily calorie count on any product that you buy. You turn around, you look at the thing, and it's got so many calories that are listed in there, and then there's a little asterisk, you're down at the bottom of the label, and it says, based on the average 2,000 calorie daily intake. 2,000 calories in a human being produces about 100 watts. Now, do you use a hairdryer?
Yep, did this morning.
I realize it's a personal question, but, you know, no harm, no foul.
Bill doesn't use a hairdryer, just for reference.
I don't have any
and
hair.
I will bet you, yeah, it's only for reference. I would bet you it's probably in the realm of 1,500 watts.
I think it's more. I think it's, aren't they all like 1,870 or something? There's one in Bill's bathroom for company. We make it smaller so it doesn't make as much noise.
So you could dry clothes with this thing.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Or the car.
A 2,000 calorie daily diet in a human being produces only about 100 watts per person. Okay? Now, prior to the discovery of fire, 100 watts was fine. That was enough. The usage today for the average person is about 3,000 watts. Why? Because they're running all over the place. They're exercising. They're doing all kinds of stuff. And we need 3,000 watts of power to exist today in our environment. Okay?
Okay.
Now, that was fine essentially in the wood-burning area. So now you're going to go back 200 years ago, colonial America or anywhere else, and it required about 3,000 watts of biological fuel density. When we discovered the use of coal, that increased the available energy. The available energy, not that everybody was using it, but the available energy to 5,000 watts per person based on the usage and the power and the fuel density of coal. Around 1960, as we got more energy efficient, that increased the availability to 8,000 watts per person. Okay, so we're still way ahead of whatever people are actually consuming. Nuclear energy could have increased that available power per person to 16,000 watts by 2010 until these people started screaming about nuclear energy and not building any more plants. So man could have had the availability personally of 16,000 watts of energy through nuclear power, but was really only using about 2,000 of them. So the more energy power you have, the more economic development follows. And the standard of living goes up, okay? You wind up with energy-efficient appliances, energy-efficient homes, energy-efficient light bulbs. All that is based on this energy density ratio, okay? Okay, now comes the green movement, okay? These guys come in there and they go, wow, too damn many people on the face of the earth, and they're going to start, if they keep populating the way they do and the population keeps increasing, and it's gone up 3 billion in the world in the last 20 years since 2000. And that's an important number. I'll tell you why in a minute. So we have added 3 billion people to the population of the earth in the last 20 years. This is a problem because now the Greens are going, we are going far beyond our ability to sustain, and I hate that word, to sustain the population if it continues to increase like this. Yes, now that we're talking about food production, we're talking about housing, we're talking about all this stuff that is necessary to sustain a growing population. The Greens, and this is Ocasio-Cortez and all crazy people, they want to lower the energy density of the economy to conserve resources, which they believe is going to control population growth. Well, in fact, it will. So if we go back to from where we are, and we go back to wood burning, of course it's going to reduce the population. They want wind and solar energy only, but the wind and solar energy will only supply 17% of what we need in power in America. 17%. And that's when the sun is shining and the wind is blowing. Otherwise, it drops to about 11%. So what happens is that the Greens, they completely understand that their no growth policies, in fact, are going to lower the living standards of everybody except the guys at the top. Because they are going to have huge generators, on and on and on. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So they believe, the Greens believe, that overpopulation is the cause of numerous problems affecting society, like global warming and climate change. This is their ideology. So 20 years ago, Germany, Angela Merkel, essentially in Germany, was talked into getting rid of their nuclear energy and stopping any new nuclear energy plants. 10 years ago, Germany completely stopped anything involved with nuclear energy. And the guy who talked Angela Merkel into this and set up Germany's green program is a guy named Hans Schellenhuber. Very important character. In 2012, Germany required 31,000 megawatts of power to sustain their economy, and the wind only produced 17%. Their solar program, at the same time, only could generate 11%. In Germany, electricity costs rose over 60% because Germany had to put on everybody's electric bill a renewable energy surcharge to then cover all of the subsidies that they had given to wind and solar people. Now, you can have some kind of a portend of what's liable to come here under Biden. There was zero in Germany's whole effort here with wind and solar for the last 10 years. There are zero increases. I'm sorry, there are zero reductions in CO2 gases. They achieved nothing. They achieved absolutely nothing. Okay? Between 1994 and 2012, when they stopped all of the nuclear, they had set up turbines, wind turbines in Germany. 1994, there were 2,000 of them, and as of 2012, there were 23,000, 1,000% increase. The wind turbines in Germany would operate at less than 30% of capacity 90% of the time.
Because of the lack of wind?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, and especially they had problems during the winter, the same way they had in Texas here several months ago.
Sure.
They froze up. It was very simple. They froze up, okay? A little Jeopardy question on that. At the Battle of the Chosin Reservoir in Korea in 1950, when it was 30 degrees below zero and our M1 rifles wouldn't work, you know how we unfroze them?
Cigarette
lighters? It's a Jeopardy question if you ever get it. Our soldiers were peeing on them.
Ah.
All of a sudden they worked. Okay. So we get back to this guy named Hans Schellenhuber, S-C-H-E-L-L-N-H-U-B-E-R. And he sold the green idea to Angela Merkel, who, by the way, is an East German communist, if you remember, telling her that the CO2 emissions would be reduced by 50%. They didn't go down at all. Didn't go down at all. So in the last 10 years, Germany has now started building coal-fired plants because they need the energy. Okay, Germany actually had the best economy of any of the countries in Western Europe, and that in the last 10 years is due to the fact that they got rid of this whole green nonsense, they went back to coal-fired power plants, and off they go again, okay? Okay, now let's talk about Hans Joachim Schellenhuber. This guy has
rolls
been
right off your
in
tongue.
The pardon me?
Rolls right off your tongue.
Yeah, rolls right off. He should have an E between the L and the N, but it's Schellenhuber. The guy has worked directly, been employed by Prince Philip and Queen Elizabeth since 2004. The guy was their climate change advisor. Schellenberger also helped Pope Francis to issue his papal edict called Laudato Si, quote unquote, which translates to on care for our common home, warning about global warming. Now, there is no pope up until the current communist pope from Argentina that ever subscribed to the whole global warming climate change ideology. Somebody had to change him. This was Schellenhuber. Schellenhuber, in fact, went to the Vatican and wrote this papal thing, Laudato Si, or on care for our common home, which was warning out of the Vatican about global warming. Laudato Si specifically states that mankind is responsible for climate change. It's all our problem. In 2004, Queen Elizabeth sent Schellenhuber to talk to President Bush right after he had got elected and try and convince President Bush, George Bush, W., that we were causing climate change. It was all our fault. He's the guy who convinced Merkel and Germany to abandon their nuclear program after the Japanese, if you remember, the nuclear accident at Fukushima in 2011. So 2012, Merkel bought into this guy and everything he was telling her, and that was the end of it. For the last 10 years, Schellenhuber has represented Great Britain around the world on climate change. 2004, Queen Elizabeth went to Berlin in Germany to open the climate change conference, and she knighted Schellenhuber during the conference. Made him a British knight.
Wow.
Okay? Tony Blair is involved. In 2005, Tony Blair had Schellenhuber organize the G8 summit conference in Scotland on climate change. These guys all bought into this. Gets better. In 2009, Prince Charles coordinated the UN climate change conference in Copenhagen. I don't know what's wrong with these people over there. They live on an island. Now, what's really scary is that Schellenhuber collaborated very closely with a guy named John Holdren. You remember him from the COVID thing?
Oh, yeah.
Last couple weeks?
Our old pal, John Holdren.
John Holdren was Obama's science advisor, and he is also on record in numerous essays and reports as a proponent of massive depopulation in the world. According to Holdren, he thinks that there shouldn't be more than 1.5 billion people total on the Earth.
Wow, that's going to be a problem.
Not if he goes first and starts a trend.
Gets worse. Do you remember crazy Margaret Mead?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Remember Margaret Mead, who got together with, what was her name? It's Rachel Carson. Carson, who wrote Silent Spring and everything we were doing, polluting the earth is going to kill all the birds and the bees.
Yeah, DDT was going to kill everybody when really all it was going to do was eradicate malaria. Yeah.
Now, hold on, I'm getting to that.
Oh, sorry. Spoiler alert.
John, in 1975, John Holdren was with Margaret Mead setting up the first global warming conference. This is already 1975. That's 45 years ago. These guys have been doing it.
These guys have been after this forever. Hold on one second. We've got to take a break before Travis has a coronary in there. He's starting to jump up and down. I can't see very well, but I can see movement. And so he's gone for full body movement. Yeah, anyway, we'll let that go. So you're listening to We the People, and you can find this on archive, actually, in all seriousness. We take out the free enterprise breaks, and it is there for you to listen to free of charge at
wethepeopleradio.us.
Now here we have two real pioneers embarking upon a new career, capitalizing on this global warming hype. Yeah, they're the ones that brought you the left-handed hammer and tried to market a recycled pamper. You could say the Gullible brothers have always been the entrepreneurial type. But this next harebrained Gullible venture could be earmarked as the major clincher as to whether or not they'll be living it up in their retirement age. They put all they had into one bankroll, bought a bunch of land down at the South Pole, eagerly awaiting the impending doom of climate change, thereby being in the catbird seat in a new Florida. And I'm all for working hard to keep this planet clean, but man-made global warming just don't make no sense to me. But if you insist on buying into this media false alarm, I know a couple of guys who wheel and deal in frozen farms.
If we had some global warming,
if we had some global warming,
it wouldn't be 20 below,
it wouldn't be 20 below.
If we had some global warming,
if we had some global warming,
I wouldn't be shoveling snow,
I wouldn't be shoveling that blasted snow.
If we had some global warming, if we
had some... Good old Ray Stevens. You can always count on him. All right. Mr. Friedman, back to you.
Yes, ma'am. Let's look into Prince Philip's background a little bit more, because he's a principal in this thing. He's as important as John Holdren and Hans Schellenhuber. Back in the late 70s, and I quote, Prince Philip said, "We talk about over and underdeveloped countries. I think a more exact division might be between underdeveloped and overpopulated. The more people there are, the more industry, and the more waste and the more sewage there is, and therefore the more pollution." 1988. Sit down for this one. In the event, quote, "In the event I am reborn, I would like to return as a deadly virus in order to contribute something to solve overpopulation."
Wow. That's a that's an what kind of books did he was he read as a child? Grow up with a dream like that.
Well, I'm going to tell you in a minute. Okay, third
visionary
one.
Today.
Quote, 1989, again in People magazine, "I don't claim to have any special interest in natural history, but as a boy I was made aware of the annual fluctuations in the number of game animals and the need to adjust the cull, C-U-L-L, to the size of the surplus population." Well, that goes on all over the world, doesn't it? We have to call deer, we have to call rabbits, we have to call all kinds of animals in the population, because otherwise they'll starve and they'll die and they'll ruin the, you know, ruin the land. So he was real big into this, okay? As a result of that, Prince Philip, together with Prince Bernhard of Holland, which is a whole story unto itself with Bernhard and the Germans and World War II, and Sir Julian Huxley, created the World Wildlife Fund, which is the largest conservation organization in the world. Philip, you mentioned DDT. Philip was absolutely, as was the World Wildlife Fund, against outlawing DDT to eradicate malaria in Africa. In 1981, Philip said, quote, "What people didn't realize was that malaria was actually controlling the growth of the population. The consequence was that within about 20 years, the population doubled. Now they've got to find something for all those people to do and some way to feed them.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, he's a swell guy. Okay? So who was Philip? Philip was one of five children that was born to the king and queen of Denmark in 1921. He became a great, great admirer of eugenics. Eugenics, and I think you know what eugenics is. It was practiced by Hitler and the Nazis, right? They would go into the asylums and stuff like that, and they would get rid of, very quickly, people who were disabled, people who were mentally ill, things like that. That's eugenics. Oh, well, now wait a minute. Let me think a minute. Oh, Margaret Sanger, who started Planned Parenthood.
Planned Parenthood, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. She was a great proponent of eugenics. And do you think there is some reason why the majority of Planned Parenthood abortion clinics are in black communities? Hmm. I wonder.
Yeah, it just seems like an accident, huh?
Eugenics wound up getting its name changed when it went out of, fashion.
Yeah.
George Bernard Shaw, by the way, was a great proponent of eugenics. The name wound up being changed to environmentalism. Okay? They gave it this nice, fresh, new name. Let us take care of the environment and get rid of people who aren't going to contribute. Now, Philip's uncle, I don't know if you remember Lord Mountbatten, Earl Mountbatten, who was the Viceroy of India after World War I. He was actually assassinated by the IRA while he was out there fishing on a lake, I think around 1989-1990. Mountbatten's name, and it was Philip Mountbatten, okay, originally, before he married Elizabeth, was Battenberg. And Earl Mountbatten was originally Lord Battenberg, and this goes back to Germany, Queen Victoria and her extended family. After World War I, Lord Battenberg changed his name to Mountbatten, because of the German stigma, okay, after World War I. It was Earl Mountbatten who introduced Philip to Elizabeth and brokered their marriage. At the time, she was 13 and Philip was 18. Now, make that out of whatever you wish. Philip had some sisters. And in the early 30s, there were four sisters, all married high-ranking members of Europe's elite. This is back in the 30s. And his older sister, Sophie, married an SS colonel who was on Heinrich Himmler's personal staff. So you remember all this eugenic stuff that was going on. Okay?
Right.
Start connecting dots. Okay. Philip, in 1986, decided that the only way that his ideology and the World Wildlife Fund and depopulation was going to get any traction was to create environmentalism and conservation as a religion, which today we see these people are crazy. Okay? So in 1986, he creates personally the World Wildlife Fund Religion and Conservation Network. And the whole concept of this was Philip trying to get into the Catholic Church and get the Catholic Church on his side, on the side of environmentalism and conservation. So in 1986, he said the following, quote, "It is now apparent that the ecological pragmatism of the so-called pagan religions, such as that of the American Indians, the Polynesians, and the Australian Aborigines, is a great deal more realistic in terms of conservation ethics than the more intellectual monotheistic philosophies of the revealed religion. So what he is saying here basically is that the American Indians, Polynesians, and the Australian Aborigines had a greater conservation ethic than Judaism and Christianity. Now, if you go back and you take a look at the service that was held, the funeral that was held for Philip, that wasn't really, if you watch the whole thing, which I did, that really wasn't a religious service in what we think as a religious funeral service. It was more secular. So that kind of goes along with what the guy is thinking here. He was very much anti-Christianity until he wound up getting into the Vatican. So in 95, Philip hosted a conference at Windsor Castle where he created the Alliance of Religions and Conservation for the sole purpose of infiltrating the Catholic Church. Okay? And in 2008, as this went along, he stated, quote, "Everyone thinks it's to do with not enough food, but it's really that demand is too great because there are too many people."
Mm-hmm.
Now, up until the present Pope, all of them rejected Philip and the World Wildlife Fund's ideology of climate change, global warming, environmentalism, the rest of this stuff.
Until we get
to the present Pope.
Until we get the commie out of Argentina. What could go wrong?
Yeah. What could go wrong? Okay? Francis recently created the Pontifical Academy of Sciences in the Vatican, and he puts Hans Schellenhuber in charge of it.
God.
Wow.
You can't make this stuff up.
No.
This is now coming out of the Catholic Church as a result of Pope Francis setting up the Pontifical Academy of Sciences. We're back to the heretics and the Inquisition. The earth is flat.
They're making a comeback too, the flat earthers. I mean, all joking aside.
They're making a comeback. So now let's talk a little bit about Pope Francis.
We have about a minute until the news is going to cut us off, so just be forewarned.
Okay, so as I said before, Schellenhuber, as when he was made the chairman of this Pontifical Academy of Sciences in the Vatican, he's the guy who wrote the Pope's encyclical called Laudato Si. He wrote this for Francis once he convinced Francis about, you know, this whole climate thing and everything else. The problem is when you read Laudato Si, and you can get that in a translation on the internet, it's a complete corruption of Catholic Church dogma. It's turned completely pagan because in it, it states, and I quote, "Praise be to you, my Lord, through our sister, Mother Earth," not Jesus. "But praise be to you, my Lord, through our sister, Mother Earth, who sustains and governs us and who produces various fruit."
All right,
colors,
I've got to take
flowers,
a,
and earth.
Take a wow. quick break
take
for
break.
The news. We'll be back with our guest, Peter Friedman, and you're listening to We the People Radio. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Welcome back to the second half of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. Hey, they've got a pretty good selection of mowers up there. I know mower season's kind of winding down a little bit, but they do have good inventory right now if you want to go up and take a look, see what they have. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, right between Oasis and Pine Grove. Or you can give them a call at 226-9226. Anyway, they got a great crew up there. They have steel products, Honda Power products, and good inventories of both of those. So you can also catch them online at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da!
There you go.
There. And so let's get back to climate change with our guest, Peter Friedman. Just so people know, Sunday at noon, sometimes it's a convenient time for people, sometimes it isn't. And some of you live within the listening area, but a lot of you don't. And that is why we post all of our shows commercial-free, free to listen to, an MP3 format, and it is on the web at wethepeopleradio.us. That's Bill's big job right there.
That's my cue.
That's why we keep Bill on test.
That's what I do.
But in all seriousness, and I try to group stuff, if you have topics you'd like us to get into, I mean, we did a long series on China. Long before China was popular, and so there are a lot of shows there. If you'd like to hear, like right now we're hearing about how the virus started in a lab, newsflash, we did that show in February of 2020 with scientists.
Yeah.
I mean, this news is a year late. I think most people realize that, but they're going to, quote, debate it now. What a joke. Lots of shows on Islam with our current guest, Peter Friedman. We've done a bunch of environmental shows, lots of shows on veterans, bunches of shows on marijuana. And so if you still think it's harmless and maybe you're even good with the organized crime factor, you should really take a look at what it does to your brain and that of your children. So if your neighbor is at home smoking pot with, say, a baby, good luck with that.
Yeah.
There are going to be really big consequences when that child gets older if they don't show up before then. So anyway, we have a lot of experts coming on water in the future here. I've got some really good people lined up and also working with a show with Dr. Willie Soon, who's an astrophysicist. He'll talk to us about the sun and how that affects climate change.
Mm-hmm.
And he is the man when it comes to the sun, so... Anyway, there's a lot of information there for you, and it's designed for you to use and send to friends. Try to make it as easy as possible. All right, Mr. Friedman, back to the Vatican, huh?
Well, no, we're going to move from the Vatican to CO2 and climate change now.
Okay, Vatican bad. Check that box, huh?
Check that block. Okay, so let people research all this stuff. If they go on your website, they can download my PowerPoint. But also download the PowerPoint on COVID, because in there we talk a little bit about Henry Kissinger and Bill Gates. And you have put up the now declassified Security Study Memorandum 200. You have to read that. Start at page 85, as a matter of fact, when... The whole study talks about depopulation.
Hmm.
Gee, we're not making this stuff up.
No.
So read that, and the COVID thing and this climate change and CO2 thing kind of go hand in hand. So let's talk about CO2 and the effect of it on climate change. First of all, temperature, and I'm dying to hear the doctor next Sunday, temperature does not follow CO2. So in other words, temperature doesn't go up or go down based upon the amount of CO2 in the air. It's just the opposite. Okay? CO2 has little, if no, effect whatsoever on global climate. Remember, CO2 is 0.04 of 100% of the air we breathe. And then man-made is 0.03 of the 0.04, okay? So it's hard to even measure. Okay. The CO2 crazy people, they base all of their assertions on computer models. Well, they can't even predict the weather 2 years from now.
They can't predict it for next week.
Two weeks from now.
Yeah.
Okay, so what changes climate? The sun, the solar system, and the galaxy that we're in. CO2 levels are not determined by temperature or climate. They're not determined by temperature rising and lowering. They're determined by the climate itself. They change after changes in temperature. Ocean temperatures basically determine how much CO2 can be stored in the atmosphere, and changes in the climate and the ocean temperature can increase or decrease the CO2 in the atmosphere. So during summer, when the when water begins to warm, it gives off CO2 that's been stored, and you wind up with more CO2 in the atmosphere than during the winter. It's really very simple. Okay? Mm-hmm. Geologically, theoretically, in the last 500 million years to right now, there is absolutely no evidence that anybody can come up with that CO2 changes drive global climate. They can't, because it's, you know, it's like defying physics or defying the laws of gravity. If you throw an apple in the air, sure as hell it's going to come down, and hopefully it doesn't hit you. There are actually geological periods where the global temperature was lower, such as during the Jurassic period, and the CO2 level was higher. Remember I said CO2 responds to temperature. The lower the temperature, the less CO2 in the air. The higher the temperature, the more CO2 is released from the oceans into the atmosphere. Okay? So there is no logical reason whatsoever to believe that human beings' CO2 emissions are going to cause the Earth's climate system to suffer any catastrophic damage. That's absolutely, legitimately scientific nonsense. So what causes climate change? It's caused by variations in solar activity. The characteristics of the solar system and the sun's position at any given time in the galaxy. From 1900 to 1950, temperature increased when CO2 emissions were low, but solar activity rose. It was the solar activity that raised the temperature, but it didn't raise the CO2 emissions. From 1950 to 1970, the temperature was flat, but CO2 emissions increased. This is all in reports and everything else that you can read, legitimate reports. From 1970 to right now, solar activity has increased and CO2 has increased. Okay? Climate change. And I hope the doctor next Sunday, I'm dying to hear him. He can review this and correct anything, but I think he's going to agree with it. He's one of the people that I went to for a reference. Mm. Climate change is caused by cosmic radiation. Cosmic radiation also causes cloud formation, which is a critical factor, of course, in determining the Earth's climate, because clouds regulate the amount of sunlight reaching the Earth's surface. Remember 2 weeks ago we talked about Bill Gates and how he wants to seed the clouds with aluminum particles to shadow the sun and whatever. I think that's probably why Melinda decided he's wacko now and the cheese fell off his cracker and she's going to get the hell out of there quick. Okay?
Yeah.
And if you take a basic private pilot course, and as you recall, I've been a flight instructor since 1977, basic private pilot instruction on weather. We have a whole section in that instruction that has to do with cloud formation. It's that simple, okay? It's what's in the atmosphere and the radiation that reflects on what's in the atmosphere that causes the cloud. Sun puts out more light, but it also blocks more cosmic radiation, making fewer clouds, and more sunlight is allowed to reach the surface of the Earth. Okay? As the sun creates more light. Okay? As it creates the more light, it also blocks cosmic radiation. So there's less weather. That's why we have a nice high pressure area during the summer and there are no clouds. The sun is out. It's hot. beautiful day, but it's not creating more CO2. You with me?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So okay. So that's an effect of having more light, or is that the effect of the temperature?
No, it's the effect of having more light.
Okay.
Obviously, if there's more light from the sun, the temperature goes up, right?
Right.
Less light, the temperature goes down. So in the last 2,000 years, climate change has been caused by galactic cosmic ray flux. Nothing whatsoever to do with changes in CO2. Cosmic rays control the electrical system of the atmosphere, which in turn affects cloud microphysics and the radiative transfer of the atmosphere. Cosmic rays basically produce clouds. Both clouds and the radiative transfer change the global temperature and thus affect climate change. That's a very scientific explanation. When there's more sunlight, the temperature goes up, okay? And CO2 is generally released from the ocean where CO2 is stored. So the flux, this varying back and forth of incoming cosmic rays in the upper atmosphere, is dependent on solar wind. Also, the Earth's magnetic field and the basic energy of the cosmic rays coming through to the Earth. High energy radiation from space, which also is known as galactic cosmic rays, can affect the Earth's climate by increasing cloud cover, causing an umbrella effect. So the more cosmic rays that come through the Earth's atmosphere, the more clouds that are created, okay, which changes the climate. This is not rocket science. Okay, this is very easily understandable. Okay, so the most penetrating radiation, which are your galactic cosmic rays, can pass through aluminum. Someone should tell Bill Gates. But it is stopped by thick and dense material such as cement. But it is going to penetrate aluminum. I can go into the whole aluminum thing and with ultrasounding on aluminum to change the temperature and the molecules in the aluminum, some aluminum after it's heat treated is more dense than others. So galactic cosmic rays penetrate right through aluminum. That's why, depending upon where you sit in an airliner at 35,000 feet, you can wind up with a sunburn. Hmm. Okay?
I did not know that.
Cosmic rays seed the clouds by ionizing molecules in the Earth's atmosphere, and it draws in other molecules to create the aerosols around which water vapor can condense to form cloud droplets. So when you see an airliner that's flying up there at 35,000 feet and you see the contrails behind it, that's not the government trying to seed us with poison. Those are not chemtrails.
Uh-oh.
Those are contrails.
Oh, boy.
And we'll just... What is happening is this airliner is passing through at 500 and some odd miles an hour. It's passing through a moisture-laden zone, and the turbulence created by the airspeed of the aircraft going through that moisture area upsets the molecules, okay, and it makes ice crystals. And what you're seeing behind the aircraft are ice crystals, which is why they go away in a few minutes.
And so what about? And so I can hear people. I can hear them in the back of my head. When we come back from the break, I guess it's kind of on topic. I guess maybe you can give some insight into why sometimes they stay those trails stay there for a long time, because I think that's what always gives rise to the they are spraying us situation.
You know what the temperature is at 35,000 feet?
It's probably pretty chilly.
60 degrees below zero. That's why they stay there.
Hey. Huh. So as you get closer to the sun, I always joke that Redding's only 2 miles from the sun, and that's why it's so hot. Huh. I'm going to take away my science card.
Well, there you go.
But it's always good for a laugh, so I don't know. Maybe I'll keep it. We've got to take a quick break. We're going to come back with our guest, Peter Friedman. We're talking about science today. Mostly I'm just listening. And Bill's in charge of the science today.
Yeah. Bill. Yeah. I have a lot of questions.
We're in deep trouble.
I have a lot of questions.
You can find everything at
wethepeopleradio.us.
Sometimes I really think I'm going crazy in the night. When I hide down in the covers and I won't turn out the light. I think nothing's gonna get to me, but then again it might. What can I do to keep from going crazy in the night?
The human race was dying out.
It wouldn't be a climate change day without a little ship of fools there. So the trails stay there for all that time because of how cold it is.
Yeah, it's 60 degrees below zero.
And then sometimes they start and stop, and that's like turning on and off the spraying.
Oh, of course, yeah. We're all being poisoned.
It's a plugged jet.
Well, I mean, okay, you've been with FAA for what? You know, and around planes for 50 years?
More? 53 years.
53 years, yeah. So you might have stumbled across that in your time there.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, this is what we teach. We teach weather to private pilots to pass their written exam. And it's very simple. I mean, if any one of these morons like AOC were to just take the private pilot course, she would learn more about this.
Well, there you go.
Who is the founding guru of the whole climate change drama?
Oh.
It's a PhD named Stephen Schneider. Okay, in 1970, Schneider went to Jimmy Carter after he got elected and started jumping up and down about global cooling.
Oh, yeah.
And Carter didn't buy it.
Oh, he didn't buy it?
No, Carter didn't buy that. He bought a lot of stuff, but he didn't buy that. Okay, so around 1980, Schneider decided to start this whole production about potential man-made global warming, and it's going to be a catastrophe. All right, well, that's what, 40 years ago, 35 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Schneider has been a consultant to a number of U.S. administrations, Democrat administrations. This is really cool. In 1989, Schneider wrote an article in Discover magazine in which he stated, quote, "On the one hand, as scientists, we are bound to the scientific method. On the other hand, we need to get some broad-based support to capture the public's imagination. Loads of media coverage. Offer up scary scenarios. It's a balance of being effective and being honest." This is the guy who started the whole thing. He's the guy who talked to Al Gore originally, okay? And they figured out a way to promote this nonsense, and we'll get into carbon credits here in a minute and what's actually going on. So the climate change methodology, okay, that Schneider initially promoted, he was a guy with John Holdren with Margaret Mead in 1975 at her Endangered Atmosphere Conference. That was Obama's science advisor. So why we're listening to any of these people, I don't know. In 1975, crazy Margaret Mead said, quote, "What we need from scientists are estimates presented with sufficient conservatism and plausibility, but at the same time as free as possible from internal disagreements that can be exploited by political interests that will allow us to start building a system of artificial but effective warnings. Warnings which will parallel the instincts of animals who flee before the hurricane." So they came up with this whole BS. The whole thing was manufactured. Al Gore was in the middle of it, and he makes his movie An Inconvenient Truth. And under Clinton, what do? They have everybody in school, including my grandkids and my kids, who had to watch this idiot movie and then come home to me and go, "Geez, Dad," you know, and I'm going, "No, it's nonsense." And here's why. And then they go back and they argue with the teacher. And the teacher, who is stupid, you know, says, "Well, this got to be right. It came from the Vice President of the United States." Well, he will. Wow. I think we have a... Yeah, okay, I won't go there. So here's the carbon swindle.
Some things never change.
Okay? When they talk, they have talked about carbon credits. All right? It's all about money and depopulation. If we reduce, if these people are able to reduce the energy usage, it is going to affect population growth. Okay, that's where all this comes from. But there's now a money part of it. It's the carbon credit swindle. Behind any scam, there's money. In 2011, Deutsche Bank, which is the largest financial institution involved in derivatives, started tracking greenhouse gases, in other words, CO2 emissions. So somebody at Deutsche Bank over there in Germany says, "Hey, I see a way for us to make an extra buck." This is what happened in America in 2007 with the subprime mortgages. There were the Wall Street guys who were selling derivatives on mortgages. They weren't selling anything concrete. They were selling, it's like Bitcoin, okay? They were selling the opportunity to buy the delta between what something was selling for and what something was going to be purchased for. That's a derivative. So they were not selling anything. It was all on paper, and that's what happened in 2007. That whole subprime fiasco went down the toilet, and you know what happened from there. They tried to do the same thing with carbon credits. It's a swindle.
Mm-hmm.
Deutsche Bank went and established in Frankfurt, Germany, a carbon trading exchange. The EU, the European Union, established a carbon trading network. A carbon trading unit was established in Chicago in 2007 by Goldman Sachs. I stood right there in front of the place when I was back there and I saw it. Their ticker symbol was CCX. People were going to trade carbon credits. Well, where did carbon credits come from? They were selling what are called carbon emissions certificates, okay? Prosecutors in Germany, 2015, finally raided Deutsche Bank and unfolded this whole scam. The whole thing was a scam. The Chicago Exchange had to shut down. The one in Frankfurt had to shut down. Deutsche Bank was criminally liable for this stuff. They even created the International Emissions Trading Association so they could get all the crooks together in one place. These guys included J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, BP, Shell. They discovered that if this took off and they actually, the world said, okay, you're creating too much carbon emissions in the air, too much CO2 greenhouse gases, we're going to penalize you. So what these companies did was they made deals with lesser companies who didn't pollute as much and send CO2 into the air. And they said, okay, you're setting into the air 60% of what you're allowed, we're going to buy your other 40%. And then they would take that 40% as an emission certificate and apply that to what they were doing. And if they were putting 140% of their allotment into the air as CO2 with the carbon credit of 40%, now they're back down to 100%.
What a scam. Okay? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, you have no idea. Billions and billions and billions, and the UN was right in the middle of it. Industrialized countries like us were even paying non-industrialized countries to stop developing their economies when they were issued carbon credits, because their carbon credit could be purchased by the industrialized countries for cash. So they were driving non-industrialized. Do you get this?
Oh, yeah.
This is huge. Nobody has been reporting on this. This is all part of this whole carbon thing and the CO2. So what happens to the earth if we get rid of CO2?
All the plants die?
Well, Of course. We've got to have CO2 in order to produce through plants and high school photosynthesis. Okay?
Yeah, I passed fifth grade. I know the plants will die.
Oh, exactly. If the plants die and we completely destroy the rainforest in the Amazon, for example, in Brazil, who's going to make the oxygen?
And it's funny because the people who want to limit CO2 are the ones who want to save the rainforest. It's like, you know, guys, you ought to get your story straight. They need to be unscrambled.
Mm-hmm.
They're all involved. These people are all pulling this human pollution ideology. That's the whole thing behind depopulation, behind climate change. We've got to depopulate the world to have less pollution. Okay? And unfortunately, this whole hoax was bought into by Al Gore, George H.W. Bush Sr., Obama. In 1969, Bush Sr., while he was in Congress, created the Commission on Population Growth, created by not Bill Gates, but Bill Gates' best eugenics buddy, John D. Rockefeller III. Now, if you take a look, for example, and I'm going to connect the dots to the COVID and the vaccines thing. If you go to Eco Health Alliance, like we talked about a week ago, if you go to their website and you go down here to collaborators, click on collaborators, and who do you find? You find the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and you find the John D. Rockefeller Foundation. And I'm sorry, there's a handshake between all of these characters, and they're all in on it. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
George Bush set up the Republican Task Force on Earth Resources and called in witnesses like Paul Ehrlich. You remember who Paul Ehrlich is? The crazy guy from the 70s who wrote The Silver Bullet about population growth and how we're going to run out of food and everything by 1990?
Yeah,
Paul Ehrlich. They're all in on it. The whole bunch of them. If you don't have CO2, you're in big trouble. May 2015, Obama had a conversation with the British naturalist David Attenborough, who, by the way, is the son of the famous actor Richard Attenborough, Jurassic Park.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And Attenborough said, quote, of all of the disasters in the natural world, have one element that connects them all. It's the unprecedented increase in the number of human beings on the planet. In December of 2009, Obama's EPA, they officially declared that CO2 is a dangerous pollutant. And the stupid Supreme Court affirmed it. I mean, somehow we gotta get control of this. okay? I mean, photosynthesis is very simple. So what is the end game of the whole climate change, carbon, greenhouse gases, CO2 hoax? The whole ideology, which has become a religion now, is depopulation.
Yeah, they're not really hiding it very well either. I mean, if you really listen to what they say about almost all of these things, look at just the water in California. We're going to do some shows on that because people are just so radically misinformed. You know, they tell everybody it's the drought, but here you have enough water to grow the crops, but we're going to waste it and flush it out to the ocean, ostensibly for the fish, who, I'm sorry, aren't going to keep the people alive. Because you're not even allowed to touch them.
It's the fish. If you cook the fish, it'll keep people alive.
Yeah, you just don't get to eat the fish, though, so we're not even keeping them alive to eat. We're just getting rid, and we're getting rid of farmland. Look at how many people think that getting rid of agricultural land to grow hemp is a good idea. I'm sorry. We have trees.
I want to put an idea. In your head. If this is all about money and depopulation, if we have lost close to 600,000 Americans because of COVID in the last year and a half, and most of them were elderly, who were probably on Medi-Cal and Medicare, we have saved over $15 billion in health care costs.
Terrifying.
If you think of 3.5 million people in the world who have died from COVID, the majority are the elderly. It has cost the countries in the world who have lost these people, or I'm sorry, it has saved those countries, close to $400 billion. And we've got rid of 3.5 million people. Okay? It's just a dot. Do with it what you will. But this whole carbon thing is BS. Carbon in the atmosphere accounts for 0.04 of the atmosphere. You can look that up. Everybody agrees with it. And the man-made portion of it is less than 0.03. It's kind of like the size of the COVID molecule. 0.01 of a nano.
Well,
nanomicro.
This is also similar to, you know, keeping the temperature of the river. You know, we have to let the water out of some of the big dams, Shasta Dam in particular. We have to let out water from the top of the dam because it's warmer to match with the water at the bottom of the dam that goes through the hydroelectric plant. The hydroelectric plant obviously produces power, but that water's cooler. So if they let that out, if they let it out the bottom, then they've wasted the cool water and the river won't be the exact temperature it needs to be.
For the fish,
because, you know, I mean, throughout history, of course, you know, we had thermometers in the river, and the fish know what temperature it is.
We never had salmon before.
Yeah, right. We invented that.
Yeah.
Man-made invented salmon. Oh, my God. So we're going to go take medication now. We have to take a short free enterprise break. We can all take some kind of medication. I don't know what that's going to be. But I know the Red Pill Expo is going on up in South Dakota, and that's going great guns. So if you have a Red Pill Expo coming to in a town near you, you should go, especially if you think all this is silly. You should really go. You should go twice then. We'll be right back. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at
wethepeopleradio.us.
Perfect song for a climate change show. Liar.
Liar.
Okay, so we have like 13 minutes. Can you believe it? We've blown through the better part of 2 hours. Mr. Friedman, you're a wonderful source of information. We love
it. Can I have those 13 minutes?
You just take them all.
Okay, moving right along. What I need people to do is to read the now declassified security study that was done in 1974 that you put up on your website. Start at page 85. The entire climate change depopulation endgame is right there. It's on page, starts on 85 and it goes to 86. And they are talking about how the United States, for security purposes, was transferring funds to people in the third world not to modernize their economies. This is it. Now you can go back to the triangle and all the people coming across the border.
Mm-hmm.
We're paying these people who run these governments not to improve their economies, okay, so that they don't overpopulate. Well, what's happening is the cause and effect of that is that they're all coming here. So this has been going on for the last, 35, 45 years. Read that document. The document that you have on there that is with it, the NSSM, is the National Security Study Memorandum that was declassified that is signed by President Ford accepting the study. It's all there. So if you want a little bit more, we could talk about, for example, depopulation. Let's talk about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Okay? In 1977, after Roe v. Wade came out on abortion, she stated that the Supreme Court's desire was to diminish, quote, populations that we don't want to have too many of, unquote. Ginsburg said this. Okay? She also said that the right to abortion, quote, was then going to be set up for Medicaid funding, unquote. Ginsburg was a buddy of John Holdren. Mm-hmm. We're back to John Holdren again, okay?
Like a bad
too many
penny.
People. Now, under Obama, if you remember back in 2009, it was Holdren that advocated the mass vaccination for the H1N1 swine flu. That appeared briefly in the United States in 2009. Came from pigs in Mexico. 284,000 people died around the world from the swine flu, the death rate being 0.00004. Okay? That was the death rate. But they had such a deal here going on with Pfizer and the rest of these pharmaceutical companies that all of a sudden were gearing up for this thing. And when the swine flu was contained and it went away, they lost billions of dollars. Why do you think they're pushing the vaccines today? They're recouping all of that money. The four top guys in these companies now, Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, these guys are billionaires today. In the last year and a half. Okay, in 2013, okay, we had another vaccine that they were trying to put together for the swine flu again, which comes around every year as a seasonal flu. But that year, only 300 people died. And so they just stopped. They just stopped. They made some vaccines, but they just quit. Okay? Catherine Fitz, who was HW's seniors, Assistant Secretary of Housing, okay, who was admitted that global depopulation was a goal. And she stated, quote, perhaps it is the goal of the swine flu epidemic as well, whether biowarfare or hype around the flu season is involved. She said we had to have a radical change in how we govern resources or depopulate. It was a mathematical result. She said, unless you change the actuarial assumptions in the budget, like life expectancy, lowering immune systems and increasing toxicity levels combined with poor food, water, and terrorizing stress will help do the trick. Well, what do you think this country has gone through in a year and a half?
Yep.
What do we do? What do we do? I don't know. You know, I mean, my wife keeps telling me, Jesus, if you keep researching this stuff, you're going to wind up going into a severe depression. And I'm going, no.
You're
going
to give yourself a heart attack.
It's too late.
Well, no, because I keep coming up with the truth. Okay? And like the Germans always said, the truth will set you free.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I have it very difficult to believe that IG Farben, who is the manufacturer of the Zyklon B pesticide that killed 6 million Jews in the concentration camps, okay, is now Ciba Geigy and Novartis. That's IG Farben. So this chemical company is still there. They are now coming up with a new pesticide. Did you see on TV this week where they're talking about how maybe they can use Zyklon B to get rid of the cicadas in Washington, D.C.?
Oh, my gosh.
Are you kidding? We have gone bat poop nuts.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. It does keep coming back to that, doesn't it?
Rod Serling wouldn't accept this if you wrote it up for the Twilight Zone.
It's just not believable.
Tom Clancy couldn't write this. Yeah, I mean, this is crazy. This is literally crazy stuff. The inmates have taken over the asylum. That's what happened after the French Revolution and the Russian Revolution. That's why they're still where they're at, because they killed off anybody with a brain and common sense, or who wore glasses. You know, and the inmates took over the asylum. And I keep lecturing to people when I do historical lectures. The American Revolution was about money. It was about taxes. It was about business. It wasn't like the French Revolution and the Russian Revolution. So now you sit there and you wonder about the Russian mentality. My great uncle, Elisha Friedman, in 1922 went to Russia. He worked for Kuhn Loeb in New York, and they sent him over to Russia to survey how the Russian economy was and where, in fact, they thought they were going with their five-year plans of communism and everything else. And he wrote a famous book that is used as a textbook today. It's called Reconstruction in Russia, Elisha Friedman. And it's amazing if you read his analysis of the Russian mind in 1922 after the revolution. And in the book, after going to Russia, spending months there, talking to all these people, the commissars and everything, okay? And he said, these guys are just, they're way off base here. They killed off everybody with a brain.
Yeah, and I think people, you know, too, are just kind of in a state of mind where they're just acting like lemmings.
The other part is, if those things are real, then any crazy theory could be real. And the bad part is, then anybody who's peddling, you know, pseudoscience, and to those of us who are not scientists, okay, seems possible. How cold is it again?
Yeah,
how cold is it up there where the ice crystals come out? 60, what did you say how cold it is?
60 below?
60 degrees below zero.
Yeah, so how many people actually know that, have factored that in? So when someone tells them something else, hey, okay, that could be true.
Well, some of them say, how come all of them don't throw a chemtrail? Well, they don't all fly at the same altitude, for starters.
You know what Gore said in the movie An Inconvenient Truth? My kids came home with this after watching the movie, and Gore freely said, oh, my God, if all the glaciers, you know, and the Arctic, they all melt and everything else, the oceans are going to rise. And I'm going, okay, tell you what, come here in the kitchen. Get me some ice cubes. Fill the glass with ice cubes. Fill it all the way to the top now with water. And let's come back here in an hour and see how much it's overflowed.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to raise
Nobody
the level.
Them, How do you think a steel boat floats in water? It's by displacement.
Yeah.
So the ice cubes are all melted. Hell, we all go to a bar and we get a drink, right? The ice melts. Does the drink overflow when the ice melts? No, it just makes more water.
That's different.
That's different.
I mean, I don't know what we're good teaching people in school anymore.
We're not. We're not.
It's
scary.
And our policies have been captured by these people, and so then they convince, you know, they convince your uneducated masses or the ones who basically want to do a good job. Just like fire. Here we are in fire season, you know, and everybody's going to say, oh, it's all because of climate change. No, it's because we started suppressing fire in the 1930s. And when we did that, and then we had the tree hugger movement that came right in behind that, we stopped cutting trees, and we have created perfect campfires. If you've ever built a campfire, go look at our forests. They look exactly like perfect campfires, except much larger. And for those people that are still hanging on climate change, please go back and listen to our shows on fire. We have had registered professional foresters who actually know how forests work and how trees work. And no, it isn't. They're not spraying them. Nobody needs to spray them. They're going to light on fire because you have such a fuel load. There's no way to catch up with it. It's all very explainable. Real science actually explains all of that.
Yep. Can I leave you with one last quote?
Oh, do it. Leave us with two.
Okay, I will. In 1996, you heard of the Council on Foreign Relations?
Yes.
Okay, well, there's a whole collection and committee of whack jobs. 1996, in their magazine called Foreign Affairs, there was a full-page ad. And it's the official publication of the Council, the CFR. I quote, "We need a smaller population in order to halt the destruction of our environment and to create an economy that will be sustainable over the very long term. The root cause, overpopulation." So now, when you take and connect the dots, okay, like a flow chart, and at the top is overpopulation. Underneath there, you wind up with COVID and pseudoscience. On the other hand, you've got the climate change crazy people. The climate change people want to create a bell curve so that at the bottom on the left, as we go up this curve, we have more and more fuel density available, right? We get to the top of the curve. If we were at the top of the curve, we would have nuclear energy. Free, clean, long-lasting, no pollution.
Yeah.
They want to go now to the downside of the curve and start getting rid of all of our historical fuel density power.
When you do that,
what happens to the population?
Yep.
That simple.
It goes away. Nothing to eat.
That's right.
Peter Friedman, thank you for spending the day with us.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
And,
Lots of info to digest.
We just listened to the Twilight Zone, and off we go to the news. We'll see you again next week.
Always a pleasure.
WeThePeopleRadio.us.